And now for reading and writing and radio.
In the town of Doolittle, in the state of Nolittle, there was a boy named Tom. Now everybody in Doolittle did little, but Tom did nothing. He laid on his bed all day watching cartoons. His mom fed him, dressed him, turned the channel on the TV for him. One night he started to blow up like a balloon. Tom screamed and his mom came rushing in. Tom's mom and dad tied him to the back of the car so he could float. About halfway to the hospital, Tom exploded. The tale is, he was so lazy he didn't go to the bathroom. And the moral of this story is, you better not be so lazy that you don't go to the bathroom.
The author of that cautionary tale is Chris Graham of Rose Corgan's fifth grade Verdon. But could you be suffering from lazy-bonitis too? WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
Chris wrote about an extreme case of laziness, even for the town of Doolittle in the state of Nolittle. And Chris's teacher, Rose Corgan, in her writing, identifies Tom's disease. Here is what she sent in. Prunella, my dear, please look at the board. Assignments are stacking up quickly. There's spelling, a poem, reading and writing, science, math, art, social studies. 16 pages of this and that, writing and reading galore. You're several pages behind and 4 days late. Prunella, my dear, what will you do? A headache, you say, is coming on? Poor darling, poor dear. Do you hear? Do you hear? A headache won't save you, I'm sure. Get to work right away. Save your own day. Begin with a method so neat. Alphabetize your assignments. Work A through Z. The time will flow fast as a hurricane's breeze. A bellyache? A thumb pain? Your hair hurts? Oh, no! I fear you have let that so fatal disease, lazy bonitis, invade. Your toenails are scaling, your face, it is paling, your eyes are a-failing, your vocal cords wailing. Prunella, my dear, I'm so sorry you're fading. You could have avoided the disease, I am sure. Start every morn on the right foot. Don't procrastinate. Don't expect to be late. Work every day as hard as you can. Don't delay. Keep ahead. Don't loaf. You're going dead. Lazy bonitis. Prunella, goodbye. Well, when I was six, I was given a book that became one of my favorites. It was called More Mother Goose Village Stories. And one of my favorite stories was called The Live Vase. Interestingly enough, the lazy hero of this story is also named Tom, as in Chris's story. It goes like this. On the outskirts of Mother Goose Village lived a little old woman and a little old man. They had one son named Tom, and everybody in the village called him Lazy Tom because, but you know why. Now, Tom was always talking about being a soldier, but the crooked man shook his head when he heard about it. What, Lazy Tom grow up to be a soldier, he cried? Why, lazy boys cannot become soldiers. Tom never uses himself. He is always using somebody else. No siree, Lazy Tom will have to change if he becomes a soldier. And it seemed that the crooked man was right. But here is Tom's picture, and I want you to look at it very closely. He has a pair of fine blue eyes, a good nose, a good mouth, large ears, strong hands, broad feet, and plenty of brains, judging from the size of his head. As the crooked man said, however, he did not use them. Tom was always using somebody else's eyes, somebody else's ears, somebody else's hands, somebody else's feet, somebody else's brains, and truly, part of the time, Lazy Tom actually used somebody else's mouth. It was like this. At home, his eyes never saw anything that had to be done. Neither could he find anything lost. It was the little old woman's eyes and not Tom's that had to find everything. His hands could never chop wood, sweep, dust, or dig. Either the little old man's or the little old woman's hands had those things to do. The only things Tom could do with either his hands or feet were to play ball and marbles and run to the parades. So there was no use to ask him to run errands or to go to the grocery or post office. Indeed, Lazy Tom's feet could hardly get him to school, and even when he got there, he would not do anything. If the schoolmaster asked, "How much is 2 and 2?" Tom always waited for someone else to say 4, and then he would answer louder than anyone else, though of course his brains had done none of the thinking. If the children were folding wagons and trying to think of a new and better way to put on wheels, why, Tom only folded his hands and waited, and then always let the other brains and other hands make his wagon. What is more, his hands could not turn the sleeves of a sweater or button a raincoat or pull on a pair of rubbers. Another pair of hands always had to do those things for him. He simply folded his own hands and waited till they did. His mouth could eat all right, but if Tom was asked to recite a piece of poetry or help sing a song, then he couldn't use his mouth at all. It was really queer, and the same thing was true about his ears. Tom never, never heard anybody when he was asked to do anything. Well, the story goes on that the brownies discover that Tom doesn't use any of these things, and so they decide to take them away, so they creep up on him. And little Jumbo Brownie, with a pail and spoon, dipped all of Tom's brains from his head, all but just a tiny speck that he could not scrape very well. And you see, Tom is sleeping, I think I said. Another brownie unhitched his arms, another unhitched his legs, another took out his eyes, and still another unscrewed his ears. Then they ran away with them just as hard as they could go to Brownie Land and hid in a briar patch. Next morning, when the little old woman waked, why, all that was left of her Tom was just his body and head with a nose and mouth. This is the way he looked. "Well, I do declare," said the little old woman to the little old man, "our Tom looks exactly like a flower vase now." And the picture you see is sort of a big head and then a little neck and then a sort of a round body that he's resting on. "He most surely does," exclaimed the little old man, standing with arms akimbo and looking wonderingly at Tom. "He will be of more use now than he was before," continued the little old woman, "because we can use him for a vase and keep him filled with pretty flowers." "Yes, that will be the very thing. Let's do it," replied the little old man, gleefully clapping his hands. "I always did like useful things." So the little old woman in the story goes out to the garden, and she puts flowers in him, and every day she fills Tom's head with flowers and places him on the table in the front room. And he makes a handsome-looking vase, and the little old man and the little old woman both admire him, or it, very much. Well, Tom isn't very happy being a vase, but there's nothing he can do about it until one day a fairy has been sleeping in a tulip that they put into Tom's head, and she wakes up when she hears Lazy Tom crying softly to himself. And she can't find out what's the matter because he doesn't have any ears, so she screws one of her ears into his ear socket, and then he tells her that all these parts of him have been stolen. "Those are very queer things for anyone to steal," said the little fairy in surprise. "Why were they taken?" So then Tom has to confess that the brownies took them, or that someone took them, because he didn't use them. And the fairy says she knows who took them, it's the brownies, and that if he will promise to use them, she will get the brownies to bring them back. And you know the end of the story, I don't need to read it all. She gets the brownies, and they come back carrying the bucket of brains, and the eyes very carefully wrapped up, and the ears very carefully wrapped up. And when Tom gets everything hitched back on, and dipped back in, and screwed back on, he is a very happy boy, and after that there is nobody, no boy or girl in Mother Goose Village who is less lazy than Tom as he runs to help with his legs and with his hands and think with his brains and so forth. Well, lazy bonitis, how many of us suffer from this disease? Here are a few lazy bone stories from my own family. The first is a joke that my father used to tell us. It's a story about a man that comes along a road and he sees three bums lying over on the side of the road in the grass. And the man says, "You certainly are lazy fellows. Why, I think I would give $10 to whichever of you I could determine to be the laziest." And the first bum jumps up and he says, "I'm the laziest. Give it to me." And the second bum sits up, and he says, I'm the laziest, give it to me. And the third bum says, roll me over and put it in my pocket. Well, here are some real stories that really happened. This was when my dad was 16. He was finishing his junior year at Beloit High School. Every day, he drives himself and Trevor back and forth to town in the new Dodge. One afternoon in June, he pulls into the farm and parks the car by the back entrance to the big house. Trevor gets out with his books, but Ronald stays in the car in his good school clothes and reads. It is hot. Up in the side barn, the first haying is going on. Chuck Hoag is in the driveway, driving the team that lifts the hay fork. Ronald has admired Chuck ever since he came. Chuck is a strapping university student, down from the ag school where he's been working on his M.A., and he's now doing a 6 months internship on the farm. Today he's stripped to the waist, his body is glistening with sweat and streaked with grime, his hair is dusty. At the foot of the barn, as soon as the tines are embedded in the hay on the wagon, somebody yells, and Chuck drives the team down the incline and toward the road. Behind him, the ropes tauten, strain, the pulley rolls, the hay fork lifts, rises with its burden to the track, switches onto it, and the hay, trailing wisps of hay, swings away into the barn with a swish. Chuck drives the plodding horses past Ronald in the Dodge. When the yell comes, signaling that the hay is over the spot to be dropped, Chuck himself is beside the car window. He calls, whoa, to the horses, glances at the reading Ronald, turns the team, and returns to his starting place. A second time, he drives as far as Ronald, glances, and returns. The third time, as he turns, he speaks. Do you think you'll ever amount to anything? He says. My dad never forgot that because he felt so sneaped, so sort of guilty that he was sitting there in his good clothes and reading while everybody else was working. He told me a story recently about when he first started having crews detassel in the fields. He put an ad in the paper and said kids 13 and 14 to come out and at 7 o'clock in the morning there must have been 75 kids that were milling around on the lawn of the big house. So he got everybody over to the field and explained to them that they were supposed to pull off the tassels and how to do it, and he got them started on their sections, and then he was running back and forth like a sheepdog herding cows, loose cows, getting everybody out of their sections and started on the next section to detassel corn, all except in one section, and the kids didn't come out of that section. And so after a while, he decided, well, something's the matter, I'd better go in and find them. So he started in from the far end of the section. In the middle of it, it was a hot day, he found three or four kids, and they had decided the work was too hot and too boring, and they were tired, and so they had trampled down the corn to make a clearing so the breeze could get in, and they were sitting on the ground and playing cards. Well, Dad fired them and didn't pay them for the amount of work that they had already done, and then he didn't have any more trouble with the rest of the detasselers. But he also tells me a story about Norty Gage, who was working for him, local kid. And when Dad got to the end of a section, checking up on the boys that were detasseling, why, he found all of them, five or six, lying on the grass at the end of the row, just exhausted. And Norty raised himself up on his elbow, and he said, let's give three moldy cheers for Ron Dogan. And they all gave my father three moldy cheers. My dad used to say about trying to get us kids to do anything, no effort is too great if somebody else makes it. And the father of some friends of my kids said to me, trying to get my kids to do anything is like trying to shove molasses uphill with a hoe. I often find that it's easier to do the work myself than to nag, to force, to keep at somebody who's got the laziness syndrome. Prunella's teacher in Rose Corgan's poem used a word as one symptom of lazy bonitis. She urged Prunella not to procrastinate. That comes from the Latin word crastinus, which means belonging to tomorrow. So procrastinate means to put off intentionally and usually habitually and for a reason held to be reprehensible, that means pretty bad, as laziness or indifference to responsibility, the doing of what should be done now. It means postponing, deferring, to be slow or late in attending to things. And then the dictionary has a quotation. One yawns, one procrastinates, one can do it when one will, and therefore one seldom does it at all. My daughter joined a procrastinators club, and it was only 2 years later that they got around to sending her a membership card, and I don't know if there's ever been a meeting. Another term somewhat related to procrastination and lazybonitis is gold bricking. That means that you look like you're working, but you're not really doing it. You're goofing off. You're loafing. And gold brick itself, the term means something that looks like it's of value but really isn't. Well, what are the dangers or the results of lazybonitis, procrastinator's syndrome, and gold bricking for you and for others? Well, an example would be grading at my daughter's high school. If you didn't get your paper into an English class on the day that it was due in, it was knocked down one grade. If you got an A, you would just get a B if it was late. The second day that you didn't get it in, it would get knocked down to a C. The third grade, it'd get knocked down to a D. And if you didn't get it in on the fourth day, you really shouldn't bother because you would flunk the paper completely. So sometimes you lose out a lot if you procrastinate or if you're a lazy bones. But what about the effort then you make for somebody else that you don't make? The thank you letter that you put off writing to Grandma and you finally never send at all? Well, Grandma probably feels that you didn't like her present, and she probably also feels a little hurt. And she doesn't get that lift or pleasure that your letter would bring if you'd written it right away. And the job that you promised to do or were expected to do and didn't get around to until too late or not at all, so that somebody else has had to do it for you. That's not very fair to others. It adds to their burdens, and you get the reputation for not taking responsibility, for not doing what's expected of you or what you promised. And as for things that you'd like to do for yourself, learn to type, learn to swim, build something, go on a hike, if you never get moving on it, then your procrastination hurts yourself, too. People often say to me, "Oh, I've always wanted to write a book. I'm sure I could. I really have a story that I want to tell, but I've just never got around to it." Now, I'm not sure that this is necessarily lazybonitis that they have, but other things crowd in. And the truth is that if you really want to do something, why, then you plan and scheme and connive and shove lesser things aside, and then finally you do it. So for our writing today, Prunella dear, why don't you tell us when you've been afflicted with lazybonitis or its companion, procrastination syndrome? Tell us the story of when you kept putting something off and putting something off, and what were the results. Or tell us about whenever you were a gold brick, when you pretended to be working, but really you were goofing off or loafing. And then there's the other side of the coin. Has somebody ever been lazy or procrastinating or been a gold brick so that you suffered the results? How did it make you feel?
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.